introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he puts
look at this!
Jamal Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket Podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. And happy days are here again. We got the full crew ready to get this thing going. It's Packer week, and we're just going to jump right in. QB1, my man, how's it going?
Good, man. You know, it's Packer week and another day closer to Sunday, so I'm excited.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And he is back. The man. Wide receiver one, Miles Gorham. How you doing?
What up? I'm good. How y'all doing?
Doing all right, man. So, tell us a little bit about your game watching experience last week.
I was over in the, up in the Bay Area in California, near Oakland and San Francisco, for a friend's wedding. And first, we started watching the game at an Airbnb. You know, that ended up getting booted out of that because it was, you know, it's time to check out. So I ended up going to a Buffalo Wild Wings, and just surrounded by San Francisco 49er fans. So it was pretty funny because we walk in and it was like halftime. And then like a few minutes later, obviously, the Mike Hughes pick six and I'm going wild. So it was pretty funny. You know, all these people, you know, giving those dirty looks and everything like that. But it was all in good fun.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Saxy Prince, how's it going, my man?
Pretty good. Getting through the week. Week two on the new job. Everything's actually going really well. And yeah, man, just here to
play Spider-Man.
Yeah, that too.
Living that good life, spending that new money. All right. Well, Prince, we'll just keep it with you. We'll keep it with you here. You know, it was the first week after way too long without football. And I guess we could say it was kind of a crazy week. So before we really get into this thing, I just wanted to get from your perspective, what was your biggest surprise or takeaway from week one around the entire league, not just the Vikings, but just the entire league? What was your big takeaway?
I mean, week one, like you said, was crazy. It's hard to really pinpoint one thing. I mean, the Browns didn't start their season losers. I mean, Green Bay had a tremendous comeback. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who we thought were probably going to be
I said one thing, man. You can't take the whole season. One thing.
I mean, this is all
for everybody else.
It's all encapsulating into one giant point that this week was crazy.
So that was it. Just your takeaway is that the week was crazy.
Yeah. It was.
Okay. So. All right. I guess we'll let you have that one. Miles, how about you? What was your big takeaway from week one around the league?
Besides the three things Prince talked about, I'm gonna have to say the New York Jets on Monday Night Football. they just destroyed the Detroit Lions, and I don't think many people saw that coming. I think they, you know, the first throw of the game by Sam Darnold was a pick six. So we're like, here we go. Here comes the rookie getting a little bit of trouble first game. You know, yada yada. But no, he bounced back and they were killing it. So I thought that was definitely the biggest surprise. And then it only helps the NFC North, the other teams in the NFC North. So, yeah, I thought that was a really, really surprising, crazy scenario there.
All right. And bringing us home here, QB1, what about you? What was your big takeaway or craziest thing from week one?
It had to be Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Bucs against the New Orleans Saints. I don't think anybody expected.
Uh-oh. JR on that Yinka internet this week. I mean, I guess we give him a pass because he's like in a hurricane and stuff. But
yeah, on that hurricane
hurricane internet. But JR, can you give us that again? Only heard Ryan Fitzmagic, which I feel like I know where you're going, but I feel like the listeners will want to hear you anyway.
It was Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Buccaneers winning a shootout against the Saints.
Yeah, man, that was wild. Yeah, that was crazy. I don't know. Well, Fitzmagic, I think he went for like 50 points on DraftKings or something like that. Craziness. Crazy. All right. Well, we got some things to recap, gentlemen. Some very, very important things before we get into it, to talking about the Vikings specifically. And, you know, as listeners, you should know by now, the Climbing the Pocket podcast is in a partnership with Thrive Fantasy. And to get y'all a little taste of what Thrive Fantasy is all about, we put some prop bets down last week. Miles, I hope you're ready because you're jumping in with us this week. And so the first one was Kenyon Drake over or under 75.5 yards. JR took the over. Prince took the under. Prince, you're the winner. He did not make it to 75 yards. So Prince got that one.
Sorry, yeah, JR. Man.
All right, moving along. We had Zeke over or under 91.5 rushing yards. Once again, JR with the over. Once again, Prince with the under. Once again, Prince coming through. Zeke did not get to 91.5 yards. Prince, once again, killing it. Moving it right along. Drew Brees, 22.5 completions, over or under. Both of you took the over. Both of you got that one. That was easy money. And the last one, OBJ, over or under 5.5 receptions. Once again, you both took the over. Once again, easy money for both of you. But I think the real story, the craziest takeaway from week one, is that Saxy Prince went perfect in the prop bets. Perfect in the prop bets. Would have won all the money.
Hey, man, are you surprised? Because I am. So
I mean, definitely. But it's just that easy. You go on to Thrive Fantasy, pick some props, and you like Saxy Prince, go perfect, win yourself some money. Support the pod, support your pockets. It's good for everybody. Win, win, wins all around. So, gentlemen, are we ready for week two and the prop bets? Have you done all the no research that you've been allowed to do to get these things ready here?
Yeah, man.
All right. Well, we got a QB. We got a wide receiver. And we got a, you know, a running back enthusiast is what we'll say. And so as opposed to going through all of these for all of the players with each of you giving your picks, because it can get a little repetitive, what we're going to do for the rest of the season here is JR, let me get you with a prop bet for the QBs, get your take on it. Miles, one with the receiver. Prince, one with the running back. So get us started here. JR, Philip Rivers, over or under 275.5 passing yards.
I'll just go with the over. Hopefully his receivers will catch the ball this week.
He probably watch out. Talk about Miles' people there. You better watch out.
He probably could have had like
you didn't have a job. You crazy. He
probably last week if they would have caught the ball.
All right. Moving along here. Miles. Tyreek Hill.
The freak. Who's he playing?
I have no idea.
One job, Jason.
My job is type up the notes here. That is over or under 77.5 receiving yards.
That plays a factor here. They play the Steelers. So I'm going to take the over.
Okay. You were taking the over regardless.
I mean, I was, but you
I don't
still
know why you, I don't know why you fronted on that one.
Hey, and but you still need to know.
Saxy Prince. You know, this one, you know, maybe it's not fair, but whatever. Dalvin Cook. Over or under 85.5 total yards.
Oh, total yards? Over. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to take the over.
Everybody is killing the over. All right. Well,
the gimme.
Yeah, we'll check back in week three. See how the boys did here. And again, you can get your props in at Thrive Fantasy. Click the link in the show notes. Support your pocket. Support the pod. And yeah, let's move this thing all along here. Vikings played a game. It was a pretty good game. I mean, it was an okay game. Miles had fun watching it in enemy territory. But JR, I want your assessment because obviously a lot was made of the game. When you just look at the stats kind of outright, looks like Kirk Cousins played an amazing game. And that was some of the narrative that you saw, I think, in the mainstream media. You know, some people saying, you know, Kirk Cousins played a perfect game. Kirk Cousins, this is why Minnesota picked him up, Super Bowl, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You can see that in the power rankings, basically across the board. Minnesota shot towards the top in all of those. What was your assessment of the game overall? But more specifically, when you kind of went back and watched again and probably watched it again, what were your big takeaways from how Kirk Cousins and the team in general just played?
I thought it was a B-plus performance overall. as an entire team. As an offense, I give it a solid B. I thought they played a really strong 2.5 quarters. Quarter, you really saw them letting up off the gas, and that's something that was a bit disappointing. I would like to see them have some killer instinct and really finish the 49ers, because I think they had them down and out, but they really started the game, especially at the beginning of the fourth quarter when they had the opportunity to put them away. They just didn't. You saw the offense get really conservative. They were feeding Dalvin a little bit more than, and they weren't pushing the ball down the field in the beginning of the game. You saw a bunch of easy, short completions that they were trying to attempt, and they just weren't completing those passes that they were earlier in the game. So you would like to see them develop or have some killer instinct down the back stretch of that game. And I just thought they got really conservative and really careful. And that's something they need to do this season, because I think they need to develop that killer instinct, especially if they want those top contenders away. And we all know the 49ers are probably a couple pieces away from being a contender. But if they were playing a team like Green Bay this week, going to cash in opportunities that the 49ers didn't get well overall. Besides, they really struggled guarding the tight ends, and some play action passes and some misdirection stuff as far as bootlegs and just seeing those tight ends getting out of the backfield. So other than that, I was really happy to see that they had 4 turnovers, and that's something they really weren't good at a year ago. Yes, the Vikings did have the number 1 defense, but I thought the turnover did need to work. Causing 4 turnovers in week 1 was really good. So just the offense having some killer instinct down the backstretch, specifically in the midway through the third quarter into the fourth quarter and finishing the game, and the defense guarding tight end. So overall, I think it was a B-plus performance.
Okay. All right. I'll take that there. And I guess Miles, I'm not going to make any assumptions about your state of mind while you were at the Buffalo Wild Wings, chirping people in Oakland, but, I guess what were your big takeaways from the game? And, you know, JR mentioned there, one of the things that, you know, he would like to see the team work on is kind of having that killer instinct, putting teams away. Cause, you know, on paper, San Francisco was not, they're not as good as the Vikings are. And the game ended up being, I think, probably a lot closer than it should have been. I mean, you get 4 turnovers, your defense forces 4 turnovers in a game. You have a, you know, $84 million quarterback, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. I mean, you'd think that game would be a blowout, and it was still pretty close kind of going down the stretch there. I guess from your perspective, what was it that you were seeing, and what needs to be different for them to be able to really put teams away as we continue in the season?
Yeah, for me, and this is all speculation, but I feel like it goes into kind of the kind of coach he is a lot of this on Mike Zimmer. Like, we saw a lot last year where Mike Zimmer had to rein in guys like Case Keenum. He was worried about Case Keenum for the fact of he didn't want him creating turnovers. He didn't want him doing anything careless or reckless with the ball. He wants 21 points. That's his benchmark for the offense, basically, right? So his team got to 24 points pretty early on in the third quarter. No, not early, but like, you know, middle of the late third quarter. And I feel like he was like, all right, we're good. It was, I think it was 24-3 or 6 at that point, 100% on that. But, you know, I think he got to that point where like, all right, let's be conservative. Don't turn the ball over. Don't make risky throws, which, I mean, Kirk made a couple anyways. But I still feel like the route concepts they ran, trying to run the ball a little bit more than they were doing earlier in the game, trying to generate things. They were trying to just milk the clock instead of trying to continue to gain first downs and extend the clock and do all that. They're playing very conservative. I wonder if that's part of Mike Zimmer, his mentality, which we know he's mentioned that in the past. So what worries me is he still has that mentality. Instead of let's bury these guys, let's score as many points as we can. Don't be afraid to take chances because we're up. That to me is part of the issue for me, in my opinion, just because it does seem like he's still reverting back to that of let my defense take care of the rest of it. Y'all did your thing, scoring 24 points, even though the defense did score 6, but that doesn't matter. you know what I'm saying, though? They got past that 21 bench point, and it feels like he wanted – like, we're going to coast because my defense will take care of the rest. And I feel like he needs to understand that his offense is going to win him games. Like, they need to win him games, or they need to at least be able to put away games, too, not just – rely on the defense all the time. because that's how you get deeper into the playoffs. That's how you do things in December, January, and, you know, hopefully, you know, the plan is to get to February. So doing stuff like that. So that's my biggest worry, is that Zimmer still wants to hold back and just rely on his defense to finish and close games out instead of letting his offense open things up and kind of put their foot on the throat. So that's my biggest worry.
Yeah, and you mentioned something there, and I'm going to go back to JR, just A, because I'm curious for his take on this as a quarterback, and B, to see, you know, if him kind of, you know, tinkering with some of the knobs over on his end was able to kind of work through some of the other internet challenges that we're having there. But you mentioned that even when it looked like they were trying to be conservative, and I was joking about it, and it's kind of an ongoing thing for me, where, you know, Kirk Cousins, he does, you know, have a tendency to get a little tight from time to time. And it looked like, you know, as JR said, you know, a perfect 2.5 quarters. You know, that last quarter and a half, things seemed a little tight for Kirk. Like, he wasn't feeling as comfortable in the pocket as he was before. He wasn't really going through and scanning and doing some of the things that he was doing early in the game, where it just felt like he was playing more loosely and seeing the field a little bit better, I guess. So, JR, from your perspective, and I know now you've watched the game a couple times, did it seem like Kirk maybe was pressing a little bit there towards the end when, you know, it was – when the opportunity to put the team away was kind of there for the team?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of not only Kirk, but the play caller as well. He wasn't attempting as many throws down the field as he was early on in the game. And that's just because of the situation that they were in. That's just because of the situation that they were in during the game. But that doesn't mean that you can lack that aggressiveness and that killer instinct of wanting to put that team away, because they had ample opportunities, like Miles said, to, you know, step on the gas, keep their foot on the gas and put that team away. And they just weren't able to do that, and ultimately ended up being a one possession game. So it's kind of just like a mental makeup of a quarterback. Some guys are just built to play in that certain situation, and they just have that same mentality every time, or no matter the situation that they're in. And that's something that we want to see Kirk Cousins improve upon. He just doesn't need to be so pressed or be tensed in those situations. Just continue to cut it loose, just like he was early on in the game. No matter what the situation is, he can't tense up. So, and I'm sure he'll be in more situations as the season goes along similar to that. So that's just something he needs to improve upon. And the only way he can improve upon on that is to be in that situation. And they're still figuring out that chemistry between John DeFilippo and Kirk Cousins as well. So that's something I want to see them improve upon.
Awesome. And Saxy Prince, let me get you in here real quick. And I guess from your perspective, what were your big, you know, takeaways from this game? Anything that came out that you think is going to be, you know, great for us as we move forward? Anything that you saw that you're like, ugh, they really need to tighten that up? I guess, what were your big takeaways, concerns? You know, anything positive, negative that you think might be something that follows us through the rest of the season?
Sheldon Richardson is very, very good, and I'm very happy that we brought him in. If he plays like he did on Sunday again, I have no reservations of let Trey Waynes go at the end of the season and sign Anthony Barr and Sheldon Richardson. You can just tell how much better he's making the teeth of that defense. How much he's freeing up Linval Joseph, how much his presence just allows Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin to really, you know, really pin their ears back. He just popped out on the screen so many times, both when I was watching it for the first time and now this is the second run through that I had. And I'm incredibly impressed with him, which is kind of polar opposite of how I was feeling, you know, towards the end of the preseason, where I thought he was kind of coasting a little bit, really not giving a full effort. But, you know, obviously, you know, once the season starts, he turns it up quite a bit. I think Kirk Cousins did what he was asked to do, and I think he did that well, which is why I don't necessarily blame him for how the offense was not struggling, but like, yeah, they did take their foot off the gas quite a bit, as you guys have said. So I do want the Vikings offense, like you guys, to continue to remain aggressive. I know that Zim has its benchmark of 21 points, and obviously because of what he happened in the past, but I don't understand why he doesn't raise it to 25 or 26 or, you know, 28 for his offense, just because I mean, how much better are we as an offense when we score 28 points? And you know that's not going to happen every week, but it's like, he's just trying to get to 21 every single week rather than like, you know, kind of start raising that bar every year. You know, last year we were 21. Now this year we'll be, you know, 24. The next year we'll be 27. And I want to continue to see the maturation of Mike Zimmer as it pertains to his offense, given the fact that, yeah, he is. I think he's trusting George Edwards a little bit more so. But now just like really have a, if he is going to have a say, I want him to evolve as also kind of that offensive side of his mind where he's, you know, thinking, okay, maybe it's in the better, maybe it's going to help my defense a little bit more if we score a bunch of points, because then they don't have to, you know, then we don't have to have as much pressure on the defense to perform top notch. So I think both sides of the ball, I would probably give us a B. I think defense was lights out for the most part, and offense was good for 2.5 quarters and then, you know, kind of eased up. So yeah, that's my takeaway.
Okay. All right. Well, we have a couple minutes here before we get into, you know, get our guest on, and, you know, it should be a good time, good conversation with, you know, someone who's become, I guess, the most hated person on Vikings Twitter this week, maybe. But before we get there, I guess this is something I wanted to ask Miles and Yanka to give me some perspective on, because, you know, I'm a Vikings fan, but, you know, I've never lived in, you know, Minnesota. And I guess, Yanka, no, actually, you just finished talking. So we'll start with Miles on this one here. Miles, I guess if you could help give me some perspective on this, the Green Bay-Minnesota rivalry, because I don't like the Packers. Like, I don't like Brett Favre. Aaron Rodgers is, you know, he doesn't really seem like someone I want to hang out with. But, like, beyond that, like, I guess I don't, like, have the visceral hatred that, you know, the people in Minnesota have, and it seems to be reciprocated from the people, the people on the other side of the border there. So I guess, can you help me out? Help me understand, like, what is it all about? Is this, like, a real regional rivalry where, like, in everything that you can, you know, Minnesota, you know, like, this is just something that is an everyday part of life for you guys up there?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, for the most part, I mean, in Minnesota, there's so many people from Wisconsin that have moved up here. I feel like just in terms of like the job market and like the Twin Cities up here in general, I feel like there's just more opportunities for jobs and living and housing and all that good stuff. So I feel like a lot of those people have gravitated up here. So we're kind of constantly surrounded by people from Wisconsin, people that are Packer fans. So I feel like that really has like raised that. That stake. And obviously we're so close, like the Twin Cities. I'm from Duluth. I was right across the border from Superior, Wisconsin. So like, it's literally right there in your backyard. So you see a lot of that. So you're in that, in the weeds there. So, you know, every day, every year there's, you know, the Packers are playing, you hear people talk, you know, people walk around with Packer jerseys on, the Vikings are playing, Vikings and Packers play each other. So you see people in the Viking stadium that are Packer fans, you know, back when I know when they played at TCF Bank, I feel like half that crowd was Packer fans when the Vikings played them at home. And you're like, for real? Like, we're the home team, but they flood our stadium because they live here too. So like, it's almost like, not that Minnesota is a Packer country, no way, but like, they come up here and they like invade our territory in a sense. Like, obviously they can live wherever they want, but like a lot of those people live up here. So I feel like that like definitely fuels that rivalry for people specifically. And then obviously like the big part of it is they're just right across the border. So like we've seen how well they've done with their quarterbacks and all that and all the success they've had. And I really just feel like we've tried our hardest to emulate that. And we want to become the powerhouse of the NFC North, but the Packers have kind of been that for the last decade plus that I think we've played second fiddle to that, and we're kind of sick of playing that second fiddle. So we want to have that opportunity to kind of talk our crap and do that. And I think that's a big part of it. So that's where I come from. I know growing up, just a lot of people are Packer fans. You know, you talk a lot of crap to people with people. For me, it's all in fun, but at the same time, you kind of just hate it too, because it's just so frustrating, because it's always the, oh, we have so many Super Bowls, yada, yada, Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre, whatever, all that good stuff. So like, I definitely feel like just growing up here, being surrounded by a lot of people that are from Wisconsin that are Packer fans, it just kind of helps fuel that fire.
Okay, it makes sense. Sexy Prince, I guess, what's your perspective on the rivalry as you know, a local on the ground, living it, dealing with it? Miles, thank you for helping me remember that Wisconsin, I was like, Green Bay, No, it's not Wyoming. I mean, it could be Wyoming. It looks like it could be Wyoming. It's definitely not Wyoming. Miles coming through, help me out with Wisconsin. So, Sexy Prince, what's your perspective on, you know, the rivalry and, you know, what it means to the people in Minnesota and why it's such a heated rivalry? Because, you know, we don't seem to hate the Bears and the Lions with the same level of passion.
Yeah, Miles touched on most of it, but I think this is probably the biggest reason. I would chalk it up to younger brother syndrome. The fact that we have wanted to have the kind of success that Green Bay has had for, honestly, the last 20 years, having two back-to-back franchise quarterbacks, probably both historical quarterbacks, and just a team that has kind of been on the right side of, you know, winning more often than not. And the fact that they got a Super Bowl and two Super Bowls in those, you know, 20-plus years or whatever the case is, and Vikings haven't gotten one. I mean, it's a team that, I mean, it goes down from just even, not even for professionals, but all the way down to college. Like, Wisconsin teams tend to be better than Minnesota teams in most areas, unfortunately. And it's that kind of tension that's still there. You know, when they come over to our place, it's like they fill our stadiums and then they beat us down. Like, that's how it's gone. It's only been the last couple of years where we really actually seen that rivalry be a rivalry. And it's been really nice to actually, you know, win a game and then lose a game, win a game. And you're kind of going back and forth.
All right. Well, Sexy Prince, I don't want to cut you off, but our guest has arrived. You know, so we're all about the fair and balanced coverage here on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And, you know, it is Packer week, so I guess we should probably have someone come on to represent from the other side of the border. Peter, my man, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. Well, thank you for joining us here on the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And know that you have a little bit of time pressure tonight, so we can jump right into it if you're ready.
I'm ready.
Well, all right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are very, very happy here because we do have Peter Bukowski on with us, the man who maybe became the most hated figure on all of Vikings Twitter this week. But before we get into all that, I did want to give you a moment here. I guess tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find your work, and how you got into the industry.
Sure. So I cover the Packers for SB Nation. I also host the Locked On Packers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And I cover the NFL all over the internet. Beyond that, for SB Nation, for Aussie, for Pro Football Weekly, for FanSided. I was at Sports Illustrated for a number of years before that. Bleacher Report, Yahoo, pretty much any major site that covers sports, my work has appeared there at one time or another. So it is good to go behind enemy lines this week.
Well, it's good to have you here. So I guess we'll go back to it here. And, you know, you had some choice words about some things where, you know, Vikings fans, generally speaking, now with the way the team's been constructed over the last little while, we like to look at things from our perspective and feel that really across the board, the Vikings are a better team, but you have the best quarterback in the league. And that has often tipped things in your favor.
Sure.
You tweeted something out that went very much against the common thinking through much of the Vikings fan base, and it was not received very well. So I guess if you could just take us back through, I guess, your thought process and what you were saying there when you were kind of stacking up the units of the teams and saying that actually Green Bay is better in a lot of places than, you know, what we maybe think that they are.
All right. So let's not go crazy. Not a lot of places, but just some places that had Vikings fans in their feelings a little bit. And that's fine. You know, look, the fan is short for fanatic, right? So I totally understand that Packers Twitter is just as protective of its players as any other fan base. So I am totally sympathetic to this. But what I was reacting to was an article that Rob Domofsky, who covers the Packers for ESPN, put out where a scout, and the headline, I think, oversold what the piece said. But the headline basically said, outside of quarterback, the Vikings are better basically everywhere. And I took issue with that assessment, if for no other reason than it is pretty clear to me that the Packers have an enormous advantage at offensive line. And, you know, I think all they would need is David Bakhtiari and Brian Bulaga for that to be true. And that seems like something that if you're going to push back on that as a Vikings fan, I just don't know what to tell you, because there's just no argument that the Vikings tackles are better than Green Bay's tackles. There just isn't. And I think the interior, especially with Pat Elflein sidelined, is a pretty clear advantage with Green Bay. Now, where I think Vikings fans had the biggest problem with what I said was, I said that I thought the interior defensive line, and not everyone wanted to go with me on that part of the nuance, but the interior defensive line was advantage Packers. And that was particularly unpopular after the way Sheldon Richardson played in week one, right? He dominated the 49ers. Now, the 49ers interior offensive line is a trash fire. And so I don't think that can be discounted here. But this is the way that I looked at it. Linval Joseph is, if not the best run-stuffing interior defensive lineman, one of the three best. I mean, that's fair to say, right? I think Kenny Clark is pretty close. And if you look at, you know, a stat like Pro Football Focus's run-stop metric, they were basically even last year. And Kenny Clark is an ascending player. And then you look at the other starter on the interior, Mike Daniels, and Sheldon Richardson. I think Richardson has a little bit more top-end talent. He's a little bit more high variance, though. Mike Daniels consistently affects games, whereas Sheldon Richardson can float in and out of them. And then the reason that I said this was, I felt like beyond those two starters, Green Bay had three legitimate dudes that play inside for them. Mo Wilkerson plays inside in their nickel and dime packages. Dean Lowry, who was a starter last year and a very underrated young player, and then Montrevious Adams, who in year two has really taken that year two leap. I felt like Green Bay has five interior defensive linemen that I would put up against the two that Minnesota has, understanding that, sure, if you think those two guys are better than Green Bay's first two guys, I get it, but it's at least close. And then Green Bay gets the nod with depth. There's a lot of takes that I think you can stem off from that, but I understand that Vikings fans are feeling themselves a little bit on defense, and so they don't want to hear anything about how Green Bay's defense might be better than Minnesota's anywhere. I get that.
Yeah, and you know, when you kind of lay it out and bring the depth piece into it, I can understand the perspective that you're going with. The one that seemed to get, it's overlooked with people being so in their feelings and so upset about the defensive line take. I really needed to hear your perspective on the running backs, because, you know, at some point in the thread, as I was kind of reading through, it felt like you said that, you know, from top to bottom, you liked the Green Bay running back situation depth. I guess I'll let you use the word better than the situation that the Vikings have. And that one, I was like, whoa, because Dalvin Cook, when healthy, pretty good. Latavius Murray, you know, an established player in the league. Where did that one come from? And I guess, what was your thought process in saying, you know, Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams, Ty Montgomery are better than, you know, those two players for the Vikings?
So I followed up again today with a little bit of a tweet thread about, you know, some of the backing that I used for that tweet. I think people missed how good Aaron Jones was last year and how dynamic he was. And it wasn't just playing with Aaron Rodgers. In fact, he only played one full game with Aaron Rodgers. That was the Cowboys game. It was his first NFL start. And yeah, he chopped up that Cowboys defense, but he also absolutely destroyed the Saints defense. He had the game-winning run in overtime against Tampa Bay. Football Outsiders has a metric, defense-adjusted yards above replacement. And Aaron Jones actually had a better score than Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, and Dalvin Cook last year. And then if you look at efficiency, their DVOA, their per play metric, Aaron Jones actually scored better than Kareem Hunt and Dalvin Cook and Leonard Fournette and Joe Mixon. So I think any assessment of where Dalvin Cook is relative to Aaron Jones, where you say Dalvin Cook is clearly better than Aaron Jones, has to come from a pre-draft evaluation of those two players. Again, I totally understand that. But if you look at the sample size of what we've seen in the league, They actually have a very similar set of numbers in the first four games. And Aaron Jones was more efficient. And that wasn't just with Aaron Rodgers. That was dealing with Brett Hundley and a balky offensive line and a bad defense and all of the institutional disadvantages that he faced. And then the way that I looked at it after that was Latavius Murray and Jamal Williams. Although Williams is, as you mentioned, not as established as Murray. There's a similar type of back there in terms of the ability to pass protect. They're a little bit more upright running backs. They're not necessarily hugely dynamic with the ball in their hand, but they are steady players. And then I think where the difference is this year versus maybe last year, where the Vikings had Jerick McKinnon, is Ty Montgomery is, when used this way, and I think it would be more obvious if Mike McCarthy actually deployed Ty Montgomery more often as a pass catcher, would be the most dynamic of this group with the ball in his hands as a pass catcher. It was something that in 2016, there were times when he was the best playmaker on an offense that had Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams, and was the Packers offense at times because of, you know, some of the other issues that the offense schematically was dealing with. So that was the way that I looked at it there in terms of the overall depth and versatility that they have versus the talent at the top. Though, look, I totally understand Dalvin Cook is an exceptional talent. He is a really good running back. And, you know, he can make that take look silly by the end of the year if he plays 16 games and plays to his potential. I was just looking at what we've seen to this point, and I think there's a reasonable case that, you know, at the very least, Aaron Jones was more efficient last year. And to me, that matters. I think Aaron Jones is potentially a very, very good running back. So I think part of it is that I'm just going to be higher on Jones than Vikings fans. And that's to be expected. How many fans really watched a 7-9 team's fifth round running back, especially when he was in and out of the lineup with injuries. So, you know, again, I understand why Vikings fans thought it was a laughable take. I mean, obviously I don't feel that way.
This dynasty owner certainly did have quite a bit of Aaron Jones. So, I mean, I understand the take a little bit. And as you were talking, I actually went, and it looks like, you know, Pro Football Focus actually might agree with you as well when we look back at some of the information in the premium stats package. So maybe that wasn't as crazy as we initially thought there. JR, I guess, did you have a question you wanted to jump in with?
Yeah, JR, Peter, JR here. Nice to finally meet you, and thank you for coming on, man.
Yeah, you too, man.
No problem. You know, the Packers experienced some turnover from Ted Thompson to Brian Gutekunst this year, and I really like what he's come in and established with this team. He's done some different things, you know, having some splashy free agent signings from Muhammad Wilkerson to Jimmy Graham to what he did and even the draft, trading back, getting the extra first-round pick and addressing the secondary. So what's some of the things that you like that he's done so far, and what's your overall assessment on what he's done so far?
Well, I think the thing that I struggled with Ted Thompson was when you eschew an entire facet of team building, and that is free agency, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. And so when you looked at this Packers team over the years, you say, oh, they have the most homegrown talent in the league and all of their starters are drafted. Well, yeah, because that's the only way Ted Thompson brings in any players, right? So it's like, oh, all of your groceries are from Whole Foods. Yeah, because it's the only place I shop. That was the circumstance. And so Brian Gutekunst came in and said, here's what we're going to do. We are not going to ignore any way to make this team better. We are going to be in on every free agent conversation that we feel we need to be in. We're going to be in on available players in the trade market. And by all accounts, they were the second most competitive team in the Khalil Mack sweepstakes. They go out and they sign Jimmy Graham. One of the things that I think goes a little bit undervalued, you know, from a national standpoint, or if you're focused on the Vikings, for example, the Packers moved on from a number of high profile Ted Thompson draft picks this offseason. And one of the things that I think Ted Thompson struggled with, because the draft was the only way they built the team, was he held on to picks longer than he should have, underperforming picks, because that's all they had. They didn't look for other ways to make this team better. So you look at what Gutekunst does in this offseason. He goes out and he gets Jimmy Graham. and he adds Muhammad Wilkerson. And he makes a trade for Antonio Morrison, a linebacker that started last year for the Indianapolis Colts, led the team in tackles. And when there are injuries like there were, Oren Burks and Jake Ryan, the Packers lose two starting linebackers, the original preferred starter and then the third round rookie, who I thought should have been the starter all along. And instead of having no one, or instead of having an undrafted free agent, they're able to say, Morrison, who is a veteran, is a tough term for a guy that's been in the league for 2 years, but a guy with starting experience can now come in and give them snaps if they need it. So I've been really impressed with Brian Gutekunst to this point. And obviously the Saints wanting to give up quarterback pieces to get to move up a couple spots in the first round, that's a no-brainer. I mean, it hurt a lot of Packer fans' feelings to pass on Derwin James at 14 and to pass on Josh Jackson at 14. And then coincidentally at 45, Jackson is somehow still on the board. I think when you look back at the week one game, Jair Alexander and Josh Jackson acquitted themselves more than adequately in that game. And in fact, Mike Patton, the new defensive coordinator for the Packers, basically said, Josh Jackson, you got Trey Burton. We're going to treat him like a receiver. You have that dude. And he did. And one catch for 15 yards was all Burton could muster in that game. The final two plays of the game, Trubisky was looking at Burton. The first was a pass breakup by Jackson on a great play. He ran the route for Burton, is in his jersey. And then the last play, Trubisky is looking for Burton up the scene, and Jackson has him step for step. It causes that half second hesitation from Trubisky, and Nick Perry is there for the game ending sack. So I think to this point, you have to be impressed with Brian Gutekunst. It is not just a cultural shift, but I think the notion that he is going to explore every avenue to make this team better is something that I think every Packer fan should be on board with, given that, you know, the Aaron Rodgers window is probably the next 5 years. And then after that, who knows? I mean, he said he wants to play at least 40, but, you know, now we're in the second year in a row where he's had an injury, a potentially significant injury that he's had to deal with. So who knows what his timeline is going to be for his career.
That's great. Hey, Peter, this is Miles. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey.
Question for you. So obviously we expect Aaron Rodgers to play this week. Devontae Adams also popped up on the injury report. Let's go in. I'm a big Devontae Adams fan, even as a Vikings fan. I'm not going to lie. But let's say hypothetically he doesn't play, and you look at kind of the wide receivers that you guys have. You know, you have Geronimo Allison and Randall Cobb as the other two. But I know you guys drafted three other receivers. Who are those guys that might be looking to step up, or who do you expect to step up if, let's say, Adams does miss some time, or you know, you need some other depth pieces to come in and to play some snaps?
I think what you would see, and you know, this is unfortunately not answering the question the way that you want it answered, I think, but I think if Devontae Adams were not able to go, and it sounds like, you know, this was just a precaution that he was not practicing, that he expects to go and likely will play on Sunday. But I think if he weren't able to go, what you would actually see is more multiple tight end sets. And, you know, a little bit more old school personnel, because what Green Bay did a lot in the preseason, and they didn't do as much against Chicago, was they ran a lot more 12 personnel. They even actually ran some three tight end formations, which I thought was really interesting, something the Eagles did a lot last year. And I think they would attack the Vikings that way. I think you'd see, you know, the Packers don't have a fullback this year for the first time in what seems like forever. When they won the Super Bowl in 2010, they actually, this is hard to believe, had three fullbacks on the roster. Can you believe that? But none this year. But I think they would try and create some matchup problems that way. I think you'd see Ty Montgomery used more as a pass catching weapon. And, you know, I would think the offense would really bog down if Devontae Adams didn't play, because he is the one guy who really can create separation on his own. He has become an outstanding route runner, one of the best in football. He is incredibly slippery. He is patient but sudden off the line of scrimmage. But I also think that, you know, I will readily admit that after 1 week, I was sleeping on Randall Cobb a little bit. He is healthy. He is back in an offense led by Aaron Rodgers as opposed to Brett Hundley. And I think they would certainly be finding more ways to get him involved. But I think we saw in 2015, Randall Cobb is just not capable of carrying an offense. He is a very good secondary piece. So if Adams were not able to go, I think that would be a huge, huge blow. This is a little crazy to say, but I actually think the Packers offense would have a better chance of succeeding with Adams and than with Rodgers and without Adams.
Wow. Well, okay. So since you kind of varied from the kind of point I was trying to get, which is no problem because you brought some really good points to the table. What out of those young receivers, is there any of those guys that you see that has like kind of stepped up, you know, in terms of they've, you know, led the pack in terms of those guys that could potentially see some time down the road?
Miles over here trying to get taxi squad questions for his for his fantasy team over here from Peter. We know what's going on, Miles.
No.
Well, that's why I knew I wasn't answering your question when you asked it. So the receiver, and this is crazy to me because when the Packers drafted Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown, by the way, three incredible names. I mean, that is an all-pro name draft
in Green Bay, out of all places, too.
Right. It's very bizarre that would be that where that happens. But my assumption was that Equanimeous St. Brown was going to be the guy that steps up, and in some ways he did. He is the second of those three. Jamon Moore, who is the highest pick, is actually the guy that was inactive last week and probably would have been behind Jake Kumerow, the undrafted free agent from 2 years ago that was on the Bengals practice squad. Kumerow had outplayed him in the preseason too, but he's hurt. So it's actually Marquez Valdes-Scantling, who is seen as the most raw of those three guys coming out of school. He is a big, or at least he's tall, 6'4", 190-ish, but runs 4.3. And there were a couple. He only had a handful of snaps against the Bears, but there were a couple times when you saw him running across the field and you just went, "Whoa, that guy has wheels." Now, right now, he is he's Jeff Janis. He is more tools than he is receiver. I don't expect him to play a lot early on. I think really. Geronimo Allison is a player who has played better than I ever thought he possibly could. Not a great athlete, you know, 4'6", 40 type guy. And yet the biggest play that he made last week was a go route on Kyle Fuller, who's a really solid corner. He wasn't open, but because Aaron Rodgers threw the ball, he was open. But he also had a critical 3rd-and-14 conversion. He has the trust of his quarterback. I think, you know, in the absence of Devontae, you have to look at someone like Geronimo Allison, who's going to play on the outside. I think Marquez Valdes-Scantling would be the other opposite receiver. I don't know what he's capable of doing in this offense at this point, other than go routes, crossers, slants. I mean, he's not a nuanced route runner. It's more give him opportunities in space and he can make a play. That would be the guy that I think this year. But I think as the season goes on and as we look toward next year and beyond that, I think Equanimeous St. Brown is the guy. They were using him as a big slot. I think, you know, if Randall Cobb is not around next year, that they're going to experiment with EQ in the slot and playing with a, you know, a dual big slot, Jimmy Graham in one slot and St. Brown in the other slot. And I think you'd have a pretty formidable pass catching group there.
That sounds terrifying. I don't like anything. I like that. Oh man, Sexy Prince. I guess, do you have any questions you wanted to ask Peter before we let him get out of here?
Yeah, Peter Yinka here. Thank you for coming on. What do you think are the keys to victory for the Packers to beat the Vikings?
Well, I think number one, protect Rodgers. And you know, Rodgers is really good at, when he is healthy, mitigating the issues that an offensive line can present. But if you go back to 2014, at the end of the year, he had some issues and they were able to put him in the pistol and he really thrived there. And they did some infancy RPO stuff that wasn't really RPOs. It just sort of looked like it. This is the problem. You guys know this, the problem that play-by-play announcers have all the time. There are all kinds of situations in the shotgun where you might fake to the back and then throw it. And now it's like automatically that's an RPO. Whereas 4 years ago, that was just called play action. And the mechanics of it are very different. And so they're not the same, but they can often look the same if you're only looking at the quarterback and the running back. But the Packers have slowly incorporated some RPO stuff in. And I think we will probably see some of that in this game. I think we're going to see some the quick passing game. But if they can protect Aaron Rodgers and they can keep him upright, I think he's going to be able to find receivers. I do think outside of Xavier Rhodes, there is some vulnerabilities in this secondary. At the corner position specifically, obviously Harrison Smith is basically Thor in the backfield defensively. So the Vikings have to be able to create pressure. I think stopping the run, I don't know how much that's going to matter. The Bears stopped the run and Aaron Rodgers still picked them apart in the second half. So the other side of the ball, one of the interesting things the Packers did against Chicago was they went heavy with dime and what Ed Donatell used to call dollar package. Mike Pettine calls it turbo with seven defensive backs. I tweeted out a screen grab. There was a play where Chicago had a full house backfield, two running backs and a fullback. Green Bay had two defensive linemen, two outside linebackers and one linebacker. And that was all the heavy personnel they had on the field. They had six defensive backs otherwise. And Mike Pettine said, we dare you to run the ball. And they did, and they got impatient, and they let Mitch Trubisky throw like three or four too many passes, probably like six or seven too many passes. He averaged less than 3 yards per attempt after the first two drives, Trubisky did. Now, Kirk Cousins is better, but I wrote about this for SB Nation today. In fact, I think you're going to see Pettine deploy that six defensive, seven defensive back personnel grouping against Kirk Cousins and say, okay, Kirk, let's see what you got. And we think we can cover on the back end well enough to give our front four, front five a chance to get after you. Green Bay did not blitz a ton. I think they blitzed on something like 10% of passes and yet created the seventh most pressure in football in week one. So they were able to do that in part because they were able to cover so well, take away number one options and make Mitch Trubisky make multiple reads. I think if there's a place where Kirk Cousins still, after all this time as a 30-year-old quarterback struggles, it is getting through his progressions. If his first option is there, he can make an accurate throw and he can be very dynamic that way. And luckily Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs are awesome. And if need be, you can just throw the ball up to those guys. But Green Bay secondary is so much better than it was. And I think you can even look at it and say the defensive front is the strength of this team. But the deepest position on this team defensively is corner. And I think what you're going to see is the Packers on the outside playing man. And they're going to use those extra defensive backs to play some flood zone and try and basically cloud those windows for Kirk Cousins underneath so that he has to hold the ball a little bit longer, give Clay Matthews, Nick Perry, Muhammad Wilkerson, Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, those guys a little bit extra time to do that. If the Packers can cover well, I think they have a good chance in this game. Right now the game is, I think it's Green Bay minus one. I think that number is about right. And as of right now, assuming Aaron Rodgers plays, and that's a big assumption, I think. I have 21-20.
All right. All I could hear while you were saying all that is, man, why did they ever let Dom Capers go? We love Dom Capers. Bring
there was
back
a
Dom.
Great. There was a great Colin Cowherd, and I don't always praise Colin Cowherd for his takes. I would say it's a rarity that I do that, although I think he's really smart generally. He had this take about Colin Kaepernick and Dak Prescott and how he thinks they were overrated because of games that they had against the Packers in marquee spots. And I just thought, man, Dom Capers really made two guys superstars, if that's true.
Yeah.
And that's it probably, I mean, it feels true. If you think of Colin Kaepernick, his iconic moments are running all over Dom Capers' defense. And I think the same is true for Dak Prescott. So if you're a Packers fan, you hope that that's not true for Kirk Cousins. And if you're a Vikings fan, you know, I think you like your chances if you're a Packers fan, because Mike Pettine, you know, I it's too early to say that he's on Mike Zimmer's level. I think Mike Zimmer is the best nemesis defensively that Rodgers has faced in his career. And I think he respects the hell out of this Vikings defense and the scheme that it plays. But I think Pettine is the best version of the defensive coordinator the Packers have needed for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
All right. So last question before we get you out of here. Sure. When did adrenaline become slang for narcotics in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I don't know all the terms that the youths use these days. But you know, here's the thing. It may seem naive to believe Rodgers when he says, you know, they didn't shoot me up, they didn't do any of that stuff. Rodgers has for a long time had a stated aversion to narcotics and opioids, and he just doesn't like using painkillers. He doesn't, you know, he just has always been that way. Even when he wasn't having injury problems, he just was like, I don't like it. I don't want to use painkillers. I don't want to use Toradol. I don't want you, you know. And so did he come back out with an injection in his knee? I don't know. I think it is more likely that they used, there are these injections that basically are full of anti-inflammatory, and it's not necessarily a painkiller. Now, I've actually had these kinds of injections where it's an anti-inflammatory, and then it's actually, in the case of non-athletes, it's a steroid to help the healing process, because I tore the labrum in my hip. But I think that it's more likely that it was an anti-inflammatory. You know, did they use a painkiller? Maybe they did. But he's not going to be able to just do that on Sunday. The swelling has to be mitigated, and he's going to have to be able to move on it. He's going to have to be able to play on it. Early, it seemed like he was having issues planting on that left leg. And then you look at the throw to Allison down the sideline, the throw to Devontae Adams, the throw to Cobb. He is planting and torquing off that left leg. So how much of that was adrenaline? We'll see. I've said all week that I think, barring a setback, and based on what Mike McCarthy has said, he specifically said there have been no setbacks. I find it hard to believe that he would get cleared to come back in the game on Sunday and not be cleared to play this week. So, you know, the Vikings are preparing, based on what I've been told, are preparing for Aaron Rodgers. I think Aaron Rodgers' teammates are preparing for Aaron Rodgers, despite the fact that Aaron Rodgers is not literally preparing, as in practicing on the field. But he said this week, look, I don't need to practice to play. Mike McCarthy said the same thing. So it seems like everyone's on the same page there.
All right. Well, that's all I got. And I think we are at time with you today. So Peter, I want to thank you for coming on. And yeah, I guess not really good luck. I'd be saying that, but I wouldn't mean it. How about you? Good luck for on the injury front. We don't like injuries, so let's hope everyone makes it out, you know, the way they went into the game. But obviously we're hoping that things go very poorly for your football team.
I understand that, and the feeling is mutual, guys. But I appreciate you having me on, and I just hope it's a good game. I think I said this earlier in the week that I think the football watching public should want Rodgers to play in a game like this, and I think the Vikings fans frankly want him to play, because you want to beat this team at its best, or at least as close to its best as you can get. I know Bears fans felt that way. They got a little chesty in the first half. There are a lot of tweets that didn't age so poorly, or that didn't age so well. They were like, you know, we want to beat Rodgers, bring him back out. And then he came back out, and then, you know, with about 3 minutes
left, wonder why I don't quarter, they were like,
Oh man. All right. Well, again, Peter, thank you for coming on, and yeah. We'll hope for a good game. That we can agree. We'll hope for a good game.
Great.
Let's let the good guys.
Sounds good, guys.
All right, man. Appreciate have a good it. One.
Thanks, Peter.
Take care. Yep.
All right, gentlemen. A lot of great info there from Peter. But, you know, I want to circle back around just because, you know, JR, I know you are our resident draft guy, and you probably watch more film across the NFL than any of the rest of us here. What were your thoughts on his running back takes there? Because the numbers bear out what he's saying, but that seems blasphemous. But, like, really everywhere I go and look at the numbers, what he's saying is not crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Aaron Jones coming out. Now, he wasn't a guy that was going to be selected earlier, even midway through the draft. But fifth, sixth, seventh round, that seemed to be a fair area for him. Ended up going in the fifth round, which I thought was a very good area for him. And I thought he was going to be a great fit for the Packers because they typically run that zone scheme. He was a bit of out of place in UTSA's man blocking scheme. That didn't really suit his skill set, but he really stood out in college in his time there, and he really flourished in the Packers zone scheme, which I thought was a great fit for him. And, you know, he's serving a suspension right now, and it's really good that he is for the Vikings because I think he's a very talented back, and he fits in perfectly with that running back by committee that they do have. And I think he's without question the most talented of the bunch. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how he performs in the second matchup between the Vikings and the Packers.
Okay. All right. Well, we got a ton of info there, and I think we're just going to go ahead and, you know, we're going to bring this thing home because we've been on for a little while here and jump into it. Saxy Prince, what is your bold prediction and your score prediction for this game?
As far as score prediction, I think it's going to be 27-21 Vikings. I think Marcus Sherrill's the cockroach scores a special teams to seal the game.
That's your bold prediction, Charles? Okay, all right.
Seal the game.
What just happened to your microphone there? It feels like you're sitting. Okay, there you go. Sound like you were sitting on it there for a moment. Yeah.
No, am I in a hurricane or are you in a hurricane?
Jay, you can't even talk, JR.
he finally gets to get back at me.
Yeah, Prince got some jokes today. I like it. Yeah, I like it. I like it. All right, JR. Score prediction, bold prediction.
I'm going 27-24 Vikings. I think Mike Hughes ends the game on a pick six, similar to what Trey Waynes did a couple years ago on Sunday Night Football. So I think Mike Hughes gets a pick again for the second week straight, and it ends up sealing the game for the Vikings in that. But
back-to-back pick sixes?
Okay. No, I didn't say pick six. I said gets a pick to end the
okay.
game.
Okay. Okay.
Miles, bold prediction, score prediction. What you got?
Bold prediction? I'm going to go – oh, man, I don't even know one. I'm going to go Aaron Rodgers throws three interceptions. Is that bold?
Ooh.
That is very bold, sir.
I'm going to say that, and I'm going to say score 30-13.
Who's scoring 30? Okay, all right. Okay.
Somebody's feeling confident over
you said
there.
Bold. Uh-huh. You said bold. Uh-huh.
30-13.
Be all bold. Right.
Okay.
Sipping the purple Kool-Aid.
Okay, Miles.
No, not really. I might as well put it out there.
You know, yeah, you know, I mean, if you're going to go, you might as well just go all the way. I mean, right.
Miles went to the Bay Area feeling good.
Oh, man.
You sure you didn't go to Vegas on the way? Hey.
Miles wouldn't put 100 on it. Yeah. Need it. All right. Well, I guess I'm going to go. It's gonna be. I feel like it's going to be a tight game. But I'm going to go 24-22 for the Vikings. And Kirk Cousins is going to outplay Aaron Rodgers.
Whoa, that's bold.
Wait, is Rodgers making it through the entire game?
I mean, I don't know. I would hope not. But I mean, I'm not adding extra conditions to my
But what do you mean by outplays him? Like,
yeah, we need more details.
I know you'd ask that same question too, Jason.
I mean, I understand you. I would ask this question, but I was hoping you guys wouldn't. No, that he'll play more efficient game than Aaron Rodgers. He will have a better yards per attempt, quarterback rating, QBR, all the metrics that we're looking at to measure how a quarterback actually played that aren't just like he threw for more yards. He will just be the more efficient quarterback doing a better job of leading his team to touchdown scoring drives than Aaron Rodgers will be in this game.
I want to ask y'all this. What receiver has the most receiving yards on Sunday between each team?
Stephon Diggs.
Diggs and Adams.
Yeah, I was going to say Diggs and them.
If you had to pick one on each team,
yeah,
like, who would have the most no matter which team it is? So is Diggs going to outgain Adams? That's your prediction.
That's Randall, my prediction. Randall Cobb.
Randall Cobb is scary, though. And now he seems to be clicking in the slot a little bit. Yeah, but I'll go with Diggs.
Randall Cobb and Adam Thielen.
I'm going to go with Thielen. I think Thielen's going to eat in the slot.
They don't have him ready yet. I mean, Jair's good, but
he's not ready yet.
Yeah.
He's not following him to the slot, is he?
Yeah, he is. Boy. He's playing slot, yeah.
And Diggs
is going to get Josh Jackson, though, so he could eat.
Oh, Josh Jackson hips camp.
Yeah, so I said, Diggs might
eat. He's not ready for all that. All right. What y'all been doing this week? Prince, football machine, anything else we should be looking
for? Hey, Jared, you made me think of this. Do you think they might flip this? And that, you know, the way that last week when they played the Bears, they had Josh Jackson go up against Trey Burton. Do you think what they might do is put Josh Jackson on Adam Thielen and put Jair Alexander on Stephon Diggs?
I thought you were gonna say Kyle Rudolph for a second.
They
were putting Burton on the outside. That's why they were doing that.
Right.
And he started shouting.
Yeah. All right. I'm just
I wouldn't do that if I was them because Josh Jackson, he's not a man corner. So I think it's gonna be really tough on him on Sunday. I think that's the guy they're really going to target because his hips just aren't ready to guard Thielen. Or Diggs, so they might try to stick him on Treadwell wherever he goes.
Interesting.
So, Prince, other than the football machine, what else of anything else you should be looking for? I see you on YouTube now. They put you in the front too. That was a wise decision on their part.
Yeah, because they didn't want to have them legal problems. No, I'm gonna try to see if I can maybe hit up an article this weekend. I've been thinking about a few different things, but I might also just do another breakdown of the last game.
Okay. All right. So Football Machine, YouTube, you can find the Saxy Prince, check out Zone Coverage. JR, what's your recording schedule look like this week? Just the usual spot on Andy or anything else?
Yeah. Usual spot on Andy, Purple for the Win. Also got a mailbag dropping tomorrow, just discussing Le'Veon Bell, Sam Darnold, and a host of other things as well. So be on the lookout for that on climbingthepocket.com.
Yes, sir. Well, all right. That is it. That is all. Gentlemen, good to have the full crew on. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. And we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.